Welcome to our inaugural Harvard-Westlake Goes Back to the Future podcast. Special thanks to Blaine Browning for the opening jingle. I'm Rachel Brown, and today's guest may be familiar to many of you, an alumni who has experienced roles both student, teacher, and counselor at Harvard-Westlake. He has a perspective that few can replicate. One of our most beloved members of the Harvard-Westlake community, he can often be seen jogging around the track, sharing a humorous story with students and faculty, and offering support with a dose of much-needed humor to stressed-out students and parents in the college process. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Howard.
Thank you. Wow, that's that is a very kind introduction. Thank you.
So let's start at the very, very beginning. Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? I grew up in Studio City, California.
Nearby.
I am a hometown kid. I grew up around, like, you know, around Colfax Avenue, so, like, very close to here.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And then where'd you go to elementary school?
I went to Oakwood Elementary School. I went to the country school before that. Then I went to Oakwood School for first grade through sixth grade.
And what was that like? Big, small?
Oh, it's totally small. I think it's still small today. I think each of the classes was about 30 students in each. You know, we called our teachers by our first name, their first names. And, it's funny because I take my boys to Woodbridge Park, which is kind of the backdrop of Oakwood School. And so I get to kind of see how, Oakwood has changed a lot since I went there. I'd always promised myself that I would one day go back to Oakwood just to kind of walk around the campus, and I have still yet to do that, which is kind of funny.
Do it now.
I should, actually, because I heard the principal, Margot Long, who I guess people who are Harvard-Westlake students probably know her from if they went to Oakwood, she's finally retiring, and she was my elementary school principal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then from there, did you go straight to Harvard-Westlake?
I did, but it was Harvard School. I came into all-boys Harvard School in the 7th grade, and the merger happened when I was in 11th.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was the changes just between before the merger and after?
What was the difference between the two?
Yeah, did you really get to experience it just because?
Harvard School for Boys was like an institution, right? So, I mean, it was just kind of the way it was, you know, so I knew I was going to an all-boys school. I knew that was the plan. You know, we had sister schools and Westlake School for Girls and Marlboro School for Girls. And so, you know, our parties, our dances, socials were with them. There was a dress code. We didn't have to wear, there was no uniform, but all the boys had to wear collared shirts. I'm trying to think if there's something else we had to wear with that. I mean, there were certain, obviously, traditions, things like that, that existed kind of when you've got 7th grade through 12th grade all on the same campus. And then the merger happened. They told us about the merger when I was in 9th, telling me that when I was 11th it would start. And those 2 years were actually, the 11th and 12th grade years were terrific. I loved when we went co-ed. But it was also transitional, you know, because it was two schools coming together, rich in each of their histories, people having varying opinions about the merger, learning styles, all sorts of stuff like that. And so it was just, while I really enjoyed it, it was also two schools kind of figuring each other out in the process of being together.
Yeah. So just because you've been to Harvard-Westlake before, it was like when it was Harvard, mm-hmm. what's the main thing that's different? Changed about it? Like, how'd you deal with the stairs back then? what was the cafeteria like? I'm really assuming.
Oh gosh, I'm even trying to remember that. I want to say that because the whole layout was different. So like we're interviewing right now in Weiler Hall, which used to be the, I forget what it was called, but it was the visual arts building. So I did my pottery classes probably in the space that we're sitting right now. What is Feldman Horn now was the science department. That's why whenever I go up to, if I go to the basement of Feldman Horn, where you guys have like photography classes and stuff like that, I can still smell formaldehyde from my biology classes. Even though I'm sure it's not there, I've got a memory of being in those classes in that hallway. There was a great lecture hall off of the library, which is now where the Feldman Horn Gallery is, where I took AP Art History. You know, Chalmers still the same. Seaver's still the same. Seaver is, you know, first floor, still world languages. There's always been kind of a, you know, I've always had a sense about that too. Like that, when I walk in that hall, I remember being in, you know, being in French class. I'm trying to think what else as far as like, you know, the science building, Munger wasn't there at all. Just, yeah, did not exist, at least for me. So, I'm trying to remember what was there. There was kind of like some converted buildings slash almost like motorhome-esque type of buildings that was like the business office at some point. You know, Taper was there, but the pool was the old Zanuck Pool Stadium, which is nothing compared to the Copsis Pool right now. I mean, still beautiful in its own way, but it's, you know, it wasn't Olympic-sized. And to your question about stairs, you know, there was little traditions, which was always kind of fun. So it's like, you know, that shortcut that you can take from Rugby up to Feldman Horn.
Yeah, the long journey of just stair after stair after stair. Yeah,
yeah, but like, it's like the really like the spiral that's really that's really steep. Well, seventh graders weren't allowed to take that. Just kind of an unspoken tradition where, you know, it was kind of for upper eighth and above. So it's like if a senior saw. If you were going up and a senior was coming down, and remember, if you're a seventh grader, you're like this little person, and then like these seniors are like these giants among men, you know, and so it's like they at times would sometimes just pick you up and take you back down to where you came from because, you know, you couldn't take that shortcut. But we had like big brother programs where it was kind of like a seventh grader got matched with a junior or a senior. So it's kind of like your buddy who was older. And so they would be...
So when you were being picked up and carried down the stairs, you'd be right. Like, I know that guy.
Right. So, like, I remember my guy's name was Raymond Yang. So if Raymond saw me, he'd actually let me, you know, I'd be clear to go. But, you know, it was kind of funny. But the wildest thing when I was in seventh grade is our Mayor Garcetti was our head prefect. Mm-hmm. So he was senior head prefect of the whole school when I was in seventh grade.
And so what about just the attitude of the school? Because, like...
it's a good question. It was not entirely different from now. I mean, obviously there's just, you know, there's differences, you know, just as far as, I mean, I think that what is offered now as far as whether it's curriculum, as far as, you know, even like the diversity of our student body, as far as just, you know, how far the school has come. There's something about an all boys environment that is just very different. And you know, certainly there was an end game to it all. Everyone was, you know, there was people who thought about the college process and stuff, but there wasn't, you know, there are elements of competition, a sense of whether that's competition with other people or competition with yourself. But I think that it was I guess you could almost say it was more like a fraternity but with that wasn't chaotic.
So is there any experience you had then that like really changed you later in life that you really look back as like a touchstone or anything like that?
Wow. That's a good question. Excuse me. For me personally, it coincided with the merger, but it wasn't because of the merger. But when Ted Walsh came in when we merged, he came in from the Branson School in San Francisco as the new drama teacher. And I'd always had drama interests, but I had not been sorry. I had always been. I always been interested in drama, but hadn't really pursued it. And so he came in, And, you know, I auditioned for A Midsummer Night's Dream as a junior, and I was cast as Demetrius with my good friend Billy, who was cast as Lysander. And again, you know, we're co-ed now, so also suddenly, you know, my friend Sarah is playing Hermia, Jen's playing Helena, Blake's playing Hippolyta. You know, it's kind of like all these people that I kind of knew but hadn't really been classmates with, except for Billy. And but long story short, I mean, Ted coming in was the beginning of my relationship with theater, which has been probably the most defining relationship I've had in my entire life, as far as a participant and as a passionate fan.
So would you recommend theater, like any overall advice you'd have for a Harvard Westlake student going through kind of what you went through?
Well, first of all, you're not going to know how, you're not going to know if you can do it until you try. So, you know, there's a lot of kids that I think that are scared of auditioning, because auditioning is terrifying. I used to wear, larger pants so that if my left leg was shaking, you couldn't actually see during the audition. I did that in college too.
They're smart. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think acting obviously is a skill, but at the same time, it can happen at different times for people. And, you know, and I think that there's something to be said also about, working hard at your craft, whether that is as far as training or just trying again and failing better and just kind of getting up. And, you know, just because you get a no at Harvard Westlake as far as your auditions go doesn't mean that you won't find that opportunity in college and beyond. There's also a lot of people who've gone to Harvard Westlake that did not participate really in the drama program here who've then gone on to have good careers in TV, film, and theater. So
when you left Harvard Westlake, theater was on your career path?
Yeah, it was not some, well, I was hoping for it to be on my career path. My parents understandably had, you know, they were supportive of me as an actor, but at the same time, they're kind of like, okay, well, and then what? So when I got to Kenyon for undergraduate, it was, I knew I wanted to be a drama major, but they were also pretty insistent that I also double major, which at a small school like Kenyon, you can do in 4 years because it's small enough that you can get all your classes. So, got to Kenyon, which is, I guess, kind of helping you bridge to the next question. But
very helpful here. I got it.
And so I initially I knew theater, and then I wasn't sure what the other one was going to be. And I took a really cool class called Quest for Justice through the political science department. Just great roundtable class, just talking about, well, justice and talking about just kind of the principles of political science. Fascinated by it. And so I love that class. And I said, you know, I'm going to be a poli-sci major plus English. And so I declared early for both of those and felt confident, good to go. And then I remember I took one class on Plato's Republic as a sophomore, which was interesting, but not where I wasn't feeling the passion. I wasn't excited about it. And I knew right away when that started, I was like, I think I'm in the wrong place. And I, you know, I had taken, even though I had qualified out of intro English through the APs at Harvard Westlake, I still took the intro English class at Kenyon because it's a school known for the English department. And I felt, you know, you should kind of, if English is of any interest to you, you should take the intro class at a college to kind of see the way that they approach literature. And I dug that class. And so I very quickly went over to the registrar's office and changed my poli-sci major to English. And so I ended up being an English major and a drama major.
So everyone I know who's gone to Kenyon raves about it. Like, people love their colleges, but I don't know what it is about Kenyon. They just go crazy.
Yeah, and I will admit that I'm partially at fault for that because, you know, I do talk it up like it's, you know, like Valhalla or something like that, which, you know, to some it is. But it's and don't get me wrong, Kenyon is right for, I mean, if it's right for you, it is the perfect place. It can also be very wrong for you if it's, you know, because it is remote, you know, it is rural. It's 1,600 students, you know. I mean, the school is called a jewel encased in cornfields, and you can't miss the cornfields. But if that's kind of the small world that you're looking for, it can be great because you build really intimate friendships and relationships because of the smallness of it all. And the connection back to Harvard Westlake, which is so great about it, is that, you know, Ted Walsh is an alum as well. And so when I, and Miss Cairns, who retired last year from the dean's office, she was my college counselor. And so she had put together, you know, after our meeting, a list of various schools, balanced schools, as far as a list for me. Because contrary to popular belief, which I'm being facetious about, I was not that good of an academic student at Harvard Westlake. I would have been in the bottom fifth of the class, probably. Actually,
a success story. Nice.
Right, exactly. Did not test well. Was one of those kids who enjoyed going to class and learning just by being there as opposed to learning by doing. anyways, Ted or Mr. Walsh then... I show him my list and say, have you ever heard of this place, Kenyon? Because I'd never heard of it. And he goes, yeah, I went there. To which I was like, you know, light bulb ding over my head. Wow, Ted went there. He's my mentor. I love this guy. At least worth checking out. So my dad and I, the summer before senior year, or maybe it was spring break. No, I think it might have been summer. Summertime. We went and we looked at Northwestern and Kenyon. And which was funny, especially when I look back on it today, because it's like Northwestern would have been back then would have been a reach for me. Today it would have been like laughable for me to apply to Northwestern as far as the numbers I had. But it was kind of looking at, okay, city school, campus, beautiful Chicago versus, you know, rural Kenyon. And we knew right when we got to Gambier, Ohio, that that's kind of where I wanted to be. I mean, it's like we both lost our breath on that campus. My dad was terrified, actually, that I had really liked Northwestern because he was like, I really want you to apply to Kenyon. And so he was really happy when he found out that I felt the same way. And then I applied early and was, you know, done by Christmas.
And then after Kenyon, what did you do?
After Kenyon, that was into... When I got through Kenyon with my drama degree, I knew that I wanted to give acting a real shot. One of the great regrets I have is that I didn't go back. Well, getting ahead of myself a little bit. I should have gone to Chicago, or I should have gone to New York, or I should have gone to Washington, D.C. I should have gone to a regional theater hub. Where I could really kind of immerse myself in that community, because that's where I'm most happy. I think just with kind of the confidence, the swagger, whatever came from being a big fish in a small pond as an actor at Kenyon and then grad school, which I'll talk about, I said, oh, well, Hollywood's just kind of waiting now, right? So I'll just go there and, you know, and it'll all happen. And then, of course, you come back to Hollywood and you realize, wow, it's not, you know, in the reality of Hollywood is like the, you know, the odds are impossible. And I'm also not made to be I don't function well as kind of like the working actor. I've got some good friends who are working actors who I am so impressed with as far as how they are able to live their day-to-day life, make a living as both working actors as well as side jobs so that they can, you know, sustain their craft and keep doing what they want to do. I'm the type of guy who needs some level of security. I need the full-time job. But then it's like, if you've got the full-time job, you can't really, you know, pursue, you know, that other stuff. So back to your question, though. So I ended up going to, I knew that with a Kenyon degree in theater, which is a great degree actually there, but it's more philosophical and it's more academic. So, you know, I became very well versed in the history of theater, very well versed in the, I guess, kind of like the philosophy of playwriting and the philosophy of acting and learning all about Sophocles and stuff like that. I didn't learn about my body. I didn't learn about my voice. I didn't learn about me as an instrument. So I knew that I wanted to get more of that. And so now a little bit of maybe kind of a little bit of copying. Josh Radner, who is, you know, from How I Met Your Mother, was a year ahead of me at Kenyon, and we were in a whole bunch of shows. He ended up going to NYU Tisch for grad school. And so knowing how talented Josh was, I was kind of like, well, if Josh is going to graduate school, I kind of feel like I should be looking into graduate school too. And so I did. And so I ended up going to these national auditions for grad school. And the University of Texas found interest in me. And so I went and interviewed further with them, and they offered me a spot. And so then, so immediately from Kenyon, I found myself in Austin, Texas for 3 years. And that was just a straight up MFA in acting. That was, you know, of course we did theater history, and we did, we learned about criticism, and we learned about kind of directing and stuff like that. But ultimately it was a class, it was like, you know, movement classes, voice classes. I mean, I learned a ballroom dance at that school. It was, you know, and then kind of, I learned to teach at that school actually for the first time too, because part of my work study as a student there was that I had to teach majors and non-majors in theater classes, which was exciting.
Yeah, that's really moved from a small city to a pretty big city then.
Oh, as far as from Kenyon?
Kenyon to Austin.
Yes, and then what I especially liked about that was that, you know, I kind of had the very small school experience and then like the large, you know, 55,000 student experience. But the drama department at Texas was, I mean, it was kind of its own niche. And so you kind of had, I mean, it was a, as I say even to my students now who apply to big universities, I'm kind of like, you can make a big university small if you want to, depending on what you study. You can't make a small college big. So Texas became smaller for me because of the dance and drama department. But then all I did was literally like leave rehearsal, walk outside the building, and the football stadium's right across the street from the drama department. And so I was like, oh, wow, yeah, I'm in Austin. Here's Longhorn football. You know, it's like a, it's, which was, so I liked actually having that. Austin's an amazing town. It's a town that some of my classmates are still there because they loved it so much.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm very impressed with you finding these like places that everyone I know who's been there loves it. three for three, Harvard Westlake.
Yes.
Putting that there. So once you graduated Austin, mm-hmm. and then you decided that you're a career man, why come back to Harvard Westlake and when?
So, yeah, so I pounded the pavement as an actor for about 2 years. So I gave myself at least 2 years of trying to see if I could do it. And, you know, I was getting, you know, some auditions, worthwhile auditions here and there. I was doing a whole bunch of theater and stuff like that, but LA theater pays you like $5 a show. I mean, it's there's no career in it. I mean, you do it for the love. So I, again, looking for some level of security, I had reached out to Harvard Westlake just in terms of like, you know, are you hiring? You know, I've got an English degree, I've got a theater degree, I've got an MFA in theater, whatever you can do. Because I'd sometimes come back to guest teach for Walsh, for the drama department. So I'd come back over the summers and help direct some, like, you know, one acts and stuff like that. I would sometimes come in and guest for Mr. Moore's classes, like giving them dialect training and stuff like that, because I studied, like, you know, Scottish and Irish and, you know, received pronunciation English and stuff in grad school. So it's like I can do all that stuff. And so the I was just looking for work. And then Ed Hu, who is now our, and his title always changes, but he's basically our chief, I knew him as our chief advancement officer, but he was also a former dean before that. He said that they were looking to expand their alumni relations office, which I was like, okay, well, this is really good. I'm an alum of the school. This is work. I can do this. And so I interviewed, and I ended up being hired kind of for a hybrid job of being assistant to the director of alumni relations, which was going to be Ed at that time, slash also learning a little bit about deaning, because Ed was going to also be deaning at that time. So I was kind of being an assistant in ways to him, kind of for both. So that lasted a year, because ultimately, and I am so, I mean, I'm so amazingly impressed and thankful for all of that our advancement office does, but it just wasn't something that I felt that fit for me. So I got, you know, nervous, like what was going to happen next. Well, fortune was on my side, because at that time, the middle school drama department was losing Miss Benton to become a dean. And so they were looking to hire a new drama teacher at the middle school. And I interviewed for that, and I was hired for that. So then I moved to, so I moved from advancement to 3 years of teaching middle school drama. So I taught the drama workshop classes, the acting one classes. I even taught public speaking, and I directed or co-directed 6 productions at the middle school, either musicals or plays.
So you've talked a lot about, like, just feeling that you were the good there, like, mm-hmm. what you liked, what you didn't. How do you know just if you really, like, fit in place, if this is meant for you or not? Is it just a feeling?
That's such a good question. I mean, I do think a lot of it is that. I mean, the one thing I can say, it's like, you know, to me, work is so much about, to me, work is so much about your colleagues. And, you know, I love the people I worked with in advancement. I still love that office today, and I love the people I work with as a dean now, and I absolutely adore all of my former colleagues in the English department. It's just, I think, when you... I mean, there's no right or wrong to this, but I feel like I want to get up in the morning and be excited about going to work. And if I'm hesitant at all about that, you know, that to me says something. At the same time, there's a certain luxury in being able to do that, right? I mean, some people work for 50 years doing a job that they absolutely hate because they have to do it because it's what their family needs. And, you know, I respect that. But I'm not built in a way that I can do something that I'm not passionate about. If I'm not passionate about something, I check out. Maybe that just comes from maybe the theater background or something like that, where it's like, I want to just like, just kind of immerse myself in what I do, so it becomes as much a part of me as just my own life.
So what are you passionate about for counseling or teaching? Do you feel like there's a difference between the two?
Both. I mean, that's, so yeah. So then of course, you know, once the drama department, I asked to kind of then move into the English department. So I spent 8 years at the upper school English department. And so that was where like really where I got my, you know, true teaching experience. I feel the thing about teaching versus, the thing that's good about counseling is that it's good and bad. The days are unpredictable. Right. You know, you cannot. And that's something that's kind of exciting. It's like, I mean, I show up at work every day at Harvard Westlake as a dean, and I don't know what to expect. You know, it could be a very easy day. It can be a very difficult day as far as just, you know, either with students or with families or whatever the situation might be, because life basically happens. Right. With teaching. I mean, there's obviously a plan. Like, you go into class with a plan. The beauty, though, of teaching, and if you can be an open-minded teacher, is that you go in with a plan, and if that plan changes, taking advantage of that to kind of see where the class is going to go. That can be thrilling. I don't know. Maybe it's just, yeah, there's a part of me that's maybe kind of like that Mary Poppins. You kind of like pop in, kind of do your work and move on. Which I kind of like. I kind of like renewing and re-challenging myself, you know?
Yeah. So what traits would you say are kind of essential for being a counselor?
For being a counselor, for being a dean, you got to be a good listener. You need to work well with others. you need to be patient. You got to love kids too, you know, of all ages. You really do. Because I mean, that's what that's the foundation of this place, right? I mean, if you don't want to be around teenagers, stay far away from being a dean. Stay far away, frankly, from being a teacher, right? I think that there's communication skills, I think, certainly matter. And I think an ability to adapt. Because again, with this being such an unpredictable position, with new things thrown at you, the ability to be able to think on the fly and try and solve a crisis sometimes that can happen very quickly, you know, and then that needs that support.
So, if someone's in high school right now, they want to be either a teacher or a counselor. Mm-hmm. What advice would you say they need to work on? What would you say, like, is the key things to get down now to help them a lot later?
Obviously, you want to become as much of a master in terms of what it is that you are teaching. Or sharing, right? I mean, it's interesting with our dean team. You know, we're made up of a nice little mixed bunch. You know, a bunch of us have college admissions experience as far as being on the other side of the table, but not all of us do. You know, some people have been counselors from the beginning. Some of us have been classroom teachers first, like me. I think that. I mean, it's funny because there's no special plan for how to do it. You know, it's I think it's a lot of it's just about people skills, and being open to learning about people, and being open to what you learn about people. And being, as I said, able to make changes, you know, in yourself in terms of how you think, to I guess kind of stay open-minded.
So now you're returning back to the teaching position. Tell us about your new class.
Yes, and I promise this is not, we're not doing this just so I can sell our class. one of the things that I missed when I moved over to becoming a dean was the classroom time, more so than the grading time. But the classroom time, those 45 minutes of just being with my students that's kind of the void. I was like that I kind of felt leaving it. So Miss Bond and I both come from theater backgrounds and writing backgrounds, and we felt that, you know, this was an opportunity not only in terms of what the school needs at this point, but also in terms of our own passions as far as getting back in the classroom to start to take a look at, you know, more contemporary playwrights who are representing underrepresented groups. So it's not in the sense that these are playwrights that people have not heard of, because these are for the most part major names in the theater, but their stories and the plays themselves and the experience that they are writing about is something that, you know, is not necessarily taught in all the curriculum, or is really kind of looked at and on a larger level across the country.
Okay.
So we're focusing on, you know, LGBTQ playwrights. We're focusing on Asian American playwrights. We're focusing on Latinx. We're focusing on African American. We're focusing on, I think Arab American, we might go with a play as well. So, I mean, there's all sorts of voices that we just kind of feel, particularly, you know, when you're talking about American theater, which is made up of such a wonderful melting pot, you know, to get all of these voices in a room and start to just talk about them. So it's not going to be a close reading class, really, either. It's going to be more of a survey class where we just hear from a lot of voices and just talk about what those experiences are.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Sure.
One more question.
Yes.
You know, pay you. if you would like a song that really captures a time or moment at Harvard Westlake, what would it be?
Gosh, that is such a hard question. I got to go with three songs, I think, because it's just, I mean, because it's, you know, it's amazing how you listen to music, as I'm sure you experience, and you kind of like, you hear a song and you go right back to a moment, or you go right back to a person, or you go right back to an experience. In one sense, in 1991, Pearl Jam's 10 album came out, which put them on the map. So grunge was really picking up then. So Pearl Jam's 10 and basically like the song Jeremy, I will never forget that as kind of being kind of a major, major song of my, of high school. But you know, I also think back to kind of like first love when I was 16 and listening to like Pink Floyd's The Wall, because I was introduced to that by her. But weirdly, I think the culminating song for me, based on my friendships in high school, is AC/DC's Back in Black. You know, we went to see AC/DC live several times. And they're this, you know, if you don't know them, they're obviously they're classic rock. They're wonderfully childish in their lyrics. But somehow their music stays on the radio all the time. And whenever I hear Back in Black, I just think back to high school.
A good time. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Thank you again.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. That's it.